Welcome to Charter School Conversations, a weekly podcast for the Utah charter school community. I'm your host, Gina James, with the Utah Association of Public Charter Schools. We'll do a little board training, have conversations with charter school leaders, and touch on issues that affect us all. I hope you enjoy today's conversation. I'm here with April Thompson, who is a ninth grade science teacher at Lakeview Academy. Hi, April.
Hi, Gina.
She also happens to work for UAPCS as our APPEL program coordinator because she has excellent knowledge of what it takes to be a great teacher. And so we appreciate her work in that too. But that's not why we're here. So today we actually want to talk about a really neat experience that April was able to participate in this summer in hopes that it will encourage other charter school science teachers to reach out and do some kind of enrichment programs. So, April, what'd you do this summer over your summer break?
Yeah, well, actually, I was part of the Pathmaker Bridge program at the University of Utah. It's actually a two-year program, so I'll be there next summer as well. So what it is they take teachers from across the state of Utah. And if you are accepted into their program, you spend 4 months before you get into the lab, learning about cancer research. So we've got to talk with some of the head scientists at Hopkins University. They called in and did webinars with us and taught us like the basics of cancer research, what cancer is, how it works. And we got to ask them questions. It was fascinating and really fun to engage with some professionals in the field. And then we got to meet a lot of professors who work up there and find out what their lab was specifically working on. After that, we got to list kind of the lab we would prefer to work in, like what was our preference, which lab, which project. And then they assign you to a project. So then we spend 6 weeks up there working with the PhDs, doctors, specialists who are working on whatever niche of cancer they're specializing in. And we got to do our own research project that furthered their research around cancer using all of their machines and equipment. We got to attend lab meetings. And then from there, we presented our findings to the Huntsman Cancer Institute. I know that the people I work for are still presenting like my work to other places around the country right now. And then we took what we learned, and this is the piece we're working on now. We took what we learned from the research and created a whole curriculum unit that we can teach our students in the classroom that will fit the SEED standards of Utah, also work with NGSS standards, but also get kids to understand the whys and the hows of cancer research. And then we'll go back next year and we'll further our study and research and then develop more curriculum for kids to learn in classes.
Very cool. That's a lot of time.
It was a lot of time.
That's significant. Yeah. So, okay, I have so many questions. The first question is what were the options? Like, what could you choose from? I mean, do you remember the different projects that they're working on? And then which one did you choose?
Okay. So there was one project that focused on diabetes. They are finding that there's this chemical called ceramides that, because people were complaining, like, I've eaten healthy my whole life. I'm like 20% below body weight, and I'm being diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. Like, this just doesn't fit the mold. And so a doctor up there, he's world renowned, he discovered this other component of diabetes called ceramides that work like cholesterol in your body, but affect how you get diabetes. So he's working on that to try to figure out how to help people control ceramides and possibly create a drug like they can give you for cholesterol, but that would stop ceramide in your body so that you could possibly manage diabetes. So that was one.
Especially type 1. Because type 1 is like...
like these people...
you can't go back from that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so if you can prevent it. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So okay. There was that. There was another one where they were working on fish and they were using fish. And so, the ceramide people were using rats. Most of the people were using rats or mice in their lab. This particular professor was using fish, and they were looking at liver cancer. And the reason why they were using fish is because they're tiny and they populate really quickly. And you can see the effect of drugs or specific cancer types in fish really quickly. So they would inject fish with cancer and then have, and then look at their cells under the microscope to try to see if they couldn't create a profile for cancer, because liver cancer is one of the leading causes of death, but the cancer that has the least amount of research surrounding it.
Interesting.
And so they're working on liver cancer. Another lab was working on DNA regulation. I can't remember the other one, but the one I got assigned to, you have about 2 meters of DNA in your body per cell, but 2 meters is a really long. And it has to fit into a 0.5 micrometer space to fit inside the nucleus of a cell. So in order to do that, your body has to wrap DNA around proteins called histones. And it wraps it, but you have to unwrap the DNA to read it to create a protein to make your body function. So there are these things called BAF complexes. There's a CBAF, a PBAF, and a GBAF. And they act almost like hands that move the DNA around these proteins so the transcription factors can get in and read the DNA and make a protein. And about 25%, 30% of all cancers are caused by mutations in those BAF complexes. So unwinding the DNA causes a lot of problems with cancer. So they had already made the CBAF protein in their lab, and they'd already made the GBAF protein in their lab. And they needed somebody to come in and take the protocols and build the PBAF model. So I had to clone like 10 genes. And then I also had to put all those genes in a vector so they could be read to make the PBAF complex, which it took them like 2 years to make CBAF and a whole PhD project to make GBAF. And I had 6 weeks to make PBAF. So it was an intense 6 weeks.
That sounds so beyond complicated to me. I'm like, I can't even wrap my head around your PBAF. So the BAFs are like mechanical arms in your body?
No, they're motor proteins. So they're a protein that has a motor, which so means that they
it
can
flexes.
Move.
Yeah, just
yeah,
like,
so it kind of just one pulls and one pushes, and it's just almost like the best way I can describe it is almost like threading a needle, right? So you pull it through and then one pulls it through and you just keep unwinding it so it can read and then winding it back on to these histone proteins because you have this huge amount of DNA in this tiny amount of space.
That's amazing. So is the problem for cancer with the protein getting like broken up or
yes.
not untwisted
so
correctly?
The proteins have about, well, depending on which one you look at, but the one I had 10 subunits. So these 10 pieces make up the protein, and you would get mutations in one of the pieces, and then the protein wouldn't work correctly, or it would work in hyperdrive and it would cause cancer. Because if you can't stop the gene from being read or you can't read the gene, then things go wrong inside the cell.
So the DNA is not the problem. It's the protein surrounding the DNA while it's being read that
yes.
caused the cancer.
Yes.
That is so fascinating. Okay, this is not a science podcast. We're
sorry.
So teacher, how do you explain that to ninth graders? I'm barely getting it, and I'm way out of ninth grade.
So I made working with the Genetic Science Learning Center. I've known them for a couple of years. I've done stuff with them as well.
And where are they out of?
They are out of Salt Lake City.
Okay.
And they have a website with cool resources that teachers can use. But with them, we've created a model. So I'm going to give the kids like yarn and ask them, you know, and then a tiny little circle and be like, how would you fit that in there? Because that's what the body does. This is something they have to understand is structure and function. How does structure and function affect the function of the human body? It's a basic biological component. And what I've learned about my students is they don't need to know the what's because they have a computer in their hand. If they want to know what, they could look it up. But to really help kids become the next generation of problem solvers and thinkers that we want them to be, I got to get them to understand the whys and the hows so that they are engaged into learning whatever it is I want them to learn. So I'm going to have them come up with all kinds of ways they think they would do it. And then I have a paper model to show them how you would wrap it around these like marbles or proteins and show them how it wraps. And then kind of like a yo-yo. And then from there, I'm going to show them how you read it using a transcription and translation paper model. And then from there, I'm going to show them what I did with my research and how I put it together and how they work. And there's an animation that the professor I work for has that shows kind of them pulling and pushing on the DNA, and then teach them about what a mutation does in DNA to create cancer or genetic diseases.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
And so where does that fit into those seed standards, and where does that fit into your curriculum? Because, I mean, you kind of already have like so much stuff you have to teach them, right?
Yes.
So is that like an extra thing? Like, did you create more work for yourself? Yeah. Well, I mean, you obviously did.
Yes, but 100%.
But I mean, it's fascinating, and it's so valuable for your students to get this like next level. It's not just, here, learn about the double helix. This is DNA. This is what it does. Here's the four part, you know, blah, 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 what it's made of. But then it's like, oh no, we're going to take it to a whole nother level of all these other support things with DNA.
Yeah. So the nice thing about the seed standards, or the shift they're making in science standards, is that they want you to have phenomenon-based teaching. So you come up with a phenomenon that the kids are trying to answer as you work your way through. So I just took biology standard 4, which I've taught several ways in the past, and I'm just going to have my phenomenon be, how does the way DNA is packed into a cell cause cancer? And I'm going to start out with that, and they're not going to know the answer. But by the time we work through the 2 or 3 weeks that it takes us to get through the unit I'm writing, by the end, they should be able to answer that question, which by answering that higher level question, cancer's not necessarily in the standards, but they have to understand everything that's in the standards to answer that phenomenon. So they're going to get cancer on top of understanding mutation and proteins, and from DNA to RNA to protein, and translation and transcription and genetic mutations, like all of those pieces have to come into play for them to answer the big question. But I'm also going to show them that I'm an invested learner and that I keep learning and why this is important. Like, this is why you learn these information. If you want to solve real world problems, you really have to understand basic biology.
Well, and I love that you're bringing something into it in addition to showing, hey, I'm still learning. I'm still trying to figure out these things. I mean, how many people does cancer affect, right? I mean, a lot. So I think that it also puts it in like a real world situation where you're like, you're going to see this. You're going to see how this affects people. And then, you know, hopefully one of them will go on to do some research.
Well, the cool thing about Pathmaker that I'd like to put out there is they also have a student program along with the teacher program. So not only do they bring teachers up to the U, they bring students up to the U. So we can send, and I really would love people to reach out to me, we can send juniors and seniors from our charter schools up there to work with them for 10 weeks during the summer. They'll house them, they'll pay them, they'll let them stay on campus, and they can get a foot in the door in high school, which is another reason why I'm super excited about this program, is because I am going to try to send them as many of my students as I can to go be scientists and, you know, be engaged in the process of fixing real world problems. So they have it. It's called Pathmaker Scholar. And okay. Pathmaker Bridge is teacher, Pathmaker Scholar student. But they accept students every year as well. And they're really looking to promote diversity and underprivileged kids. I worked with a kid. One of the kids was from Afghanistan. His parents were refugees and they'd just come to the country. And he's up there. No, two of them, they're first-generation college students from their families, and the U will keep them on, right, and let them stay and become freshmen and help them get into school and scholarships. It's a really cool program that they're trying to promote to get kids engaged in science, and learning.
Well, it gives them that hands-on experience. Like, this is literally what you're going to be doing, and it gives them those tools by providing some housing and, you know, getting them in to have them see, no, this is something you can really do. That's amazing. Well, we'll have links in the show notes to the Pathmakers program and the Bridge program for teachers too. So how did you hear about this? Why did you even want to do this?
Well, I am always looking. I think I just love professional development because I want to be that teacher that makes a difference. I want to be, oh, I might cry. I want to be that teacher that really helps a kid find their passion. And I have a passion. I actually did genetic research before I became a teacher. So I worked on breast cancer up at Mary Genetics before I made the transition to teaching. And I just love helping kids find their passion, but I know I can't do it if I'm not current on what's really happening. And when you're teaching during the year, it's super hard to read all the articles and keep up to date and know what's going on. But there are great places out there who really want to help teachers, help kids. So every summer, I try to look for something. The state of Utah has a mailing list you can get on where they send out opportunities in science. I think there's might be a social studies one too, but a science website. So I saw it on there, read about the flyer, and then just kind of started the application process. It's an intense application process, but it's been phenomenal. Like I had the best. I did so many things, and just being back in the lab and it was just fantastic. I learned so much, and so did all the other teachers. Like we collaborated, we still talk, and I can see them just taking what they learned and making huge changes in their classrooms and with their students.
So how many teachers were involved in the program with you?
So there were five with me, but then three from the year before. So they take 4 to 5 each year, and then they take 15 students.
Oh, that's a lot of
students.
So there
was a lot of students in the lab when I was up there.
So are you teaching with this? Are you teaching the students kind of, you know, teaching us some lab procedures and things, or are you both just basically working together?
We each get assigned a mentor. So I saw them and said hello to them, and they were in the lab, and we could like talk at like lunch or in passing, or when we were like waiting at the PCR machine, we could chit chat. But they also, they get a mentor that's like a PhD or grad student up there, and we get a mentor that's a PhD up there, so that everybody's like really working with someone one-on-one to show them the ins, the outs, the whys.
That's pretty incredible to have so much staff dedication, but I bet those PhDs and the other doctors appreciated having that support. I mean, here they have someone, or were you directly helping them with their work?
I was directly helping them with their work, but they're willing to let you, you know, branch off and do some things that you could take home into your classroom too, just depending on what you need. Like they're super open. But like I had two professors. I was in a joint lab, but one of the professors I work for is a doctor. So he does cancer and does surgeries, you know, and works, has clinics and patients Monday through Thursday, and then comes into the lab on Friday and we report to him. And, you know, he would bring us stories of people that heartbreaking or hopeful stories that he was like, this is why we do this. And they care a lot up there, and they really do have you're literally sitting in the lab and you can see the hospital sits between you, mm-hmm. and you can see the people out on the pavilion, you know, pushing their IVs, and they have a really great connection with why.
Start off college being a teacher. So speak a little bit to your path to becoming a science teacher.
Well, both of my parents were teachers. So my dad is a math teacher and my mom is a CTE teacher, and I swore growing up I would never teach. Just watching the intense hours they put in and what they did for kids, I was like, I'm never doing that. So I actually went to BYU. I got a degree in molecular biology, and I went on to do work in a lab doing genetic research. But I was living down in Provo, and it was up at the U. And after 6 hours of that, or 6 years of that commute, I'd burned through a couple cars and a lot of hours on the freeway. So I actually moved over to work for a company called Plant Bioactives. They were based out of Provo, and they did gas chromatography, and they would test nutrient supplements to make sure you had the correct percentages of vitamins in there. So I did gas chromatography for a couple years, and then I had my first kid and stayed home. And after I'd been home with them, then I did what every good mom does. And when my kid went to school, I was sad and crying. So I went to school. I joined the PTA because it was my baby. So then I got involved in the school and I started helping doing reading groups and I started helping work in the school and I found that I loved it, but I didn't want to admit it because I told my parents I was never doing it.
You can't say you're right.
Yeah. So and then things changed around our house. We lost their dad. And so there was five kids and me and I needed to pay for life. And I'd been working in the school and realized that I really did love it. And just having the opportunity to be at the same place my kids were, the same schedule they were. So I went back, got a master's degree and a teaching certificate. And I've been teaching for 12 years since then.
And in science.
So it's the best of my passions. You know, yeah. Like I'm still doing research. I'm still learning. I still love everything. But I can take all the skills that I learned as a scientist and help my kids gain those same skills. Like in the labs we do and in the work we do, I can be like, oh, I know you'll use this because I did. And so I think it brings real world experience to the classroom.
Well, and that keeps the kids engaged.
They love hearing about it.
Yeah. I was going to say my kids have come home and said, yeah, our math teacher said you will literally never use this in your life. And I'm like, that is the worst thing to say to a 14-year-old who doesn't want to be there anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to hear that in a science lab, like, no, actually, you'll use this. Like, this is valuable to you is priceless as a parent. So thank you.
You're welcome.
So this summer, what is the next step? What do you have going on with that research?
So I'm finishing writing my curriculum. Cool thing is we have it written. They're going to try to get us accepted to go present our curriculum at the National Science Conference in Georgia. So we had to hurry and finish writing that because I just submitted it to see if I get accepted to go present it to the National Science Association in March. So then we'll take cancer. We did 101. Now we're going to do like cancer 201. So we'll do between March and May, we'll do a whole bunch more many more podcasts and classwork, like asynchronous online kind of thing, where we'll learn even more. And then we're going to take what we learned and we're going to go take our project to the next level. So this is what we did the first year. We're going to go back and be like, okay, here's what I want to do with my project for the second year, adding on to our new knowledge. And then we'll write more curriculum again.
Wow.
So I'll go back and see. I don't know. They're still working on my project because we were trying to make PBAF and they need to double check that it was correct. And then when I get back, I'll see where they're at and probably just take over and do what I can for the next 6 weeks to move it forward even more.
What grades of teachers? So like, was that middle school and above? Just a dedicated science teacher. Yeah. So anybody who's just...
Oh, no. One lady was teaching sixth grade.
Oh.
One guy was an eighth grade teacher. I was ninth. There was a 10th. Yeah.
Okay. So it's open. So just look at the criteria there.
Yeah.
Great. And do you know when the applications?
The applications will probably come up January.
Okay. So we'll get this out so people can learn about it and hopefully, and if they have any questions, you can reach out to April.
Yeah.
And we'll put her contact information in the show notes too. Thank you.
Well, and I can recommend people.
Oh, yeah.
So if you are interested, you should reach out to me and we'll have a conversation.
She'll vet you.
Yeah.
You want those recommendations, no?
And if you have students too, please send them my way. I'd love to talk with them, recommend them to get involved.
That's great. And that's for juniors and seniors, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, perfect. All right. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Gina.
Thanks for listening in today. The Utah Association of Public Charter Schools is a nonprofit organization that provides training, advocacy, and technical support to promote excellence in Utah's public charter schools. Learn more about us on our website at utahcharters.org.